You're listening to Drake in the Morning with Wes and Sid on 98.1 The Max.
Our guest is Bruce Van Weingarten from the Memphis Flyer. I think he has finally lost the will to live.
I can't keep up.
And this week, this is dripping with, I don't know, just giving up?
Yeah, something. I wrote about how the media has sort of been lumped into the secret society. So I just wrote a column about how where we meet and how we do it. And then last night I see on TV Newt Gingrich is basically saying the same thing, only for real, that the media is now working with the FBI and the Department of Justice to bring down Trump. So I need to get to that meeting because I'm missing out.
What do you make of the allegations? I'm not sure that I understand the deep state, which they keep alluding
to. Well, it's the leftover folks, they say, from Obama, who has...
Right.
I wrote about this. He's the one true Kenyan, and he has, you know, he's basically infiltrated the FBI to such a deep level that they can't get to where an honest FBI agent is. They're all basically in cahoots to bring down Donald Trump, if you buy the theory.
Right.
So and the Justice Department is also
so the legendary FBI and the DOJ are out to get Trump.
Well, that's what you have to go. That's what you have to believe in order to. We're down to that place where you either believe the president and this Nunes guy, or you believe the head of the FBI and the Department of Justice. So I've made my decision, but. Well, a lot of folks are on the other side.
You know, this morning I made the observation, and then I second dossier story that came out Monday that I read about and tried to make sense of and really can't. This is and there was a story yesterday about this in this entire collection of stories and more stories on top of more stories and more tentacles that leak off and go into, and it does seem like it's being done on purpose to confuse everybody so badly that they will stop caring about it. They don't care about it. It'll end up being a wash, and nobody will pay any attention to it anymore. Bob Mueller will keep going until November is one observation.
It's possible,
through the midterms. But that ultimately this is going to end up being a wash because nobody will care, and Trump and his people will find some way to... But is he guilty or is he not? It all depends upon what you read and who's guilty of what.
Right,
is it him or his people? But it's really hard to cast those kind of aspersions on the FBI and the Department of Justice of this country.
Well, the FBI has been around for a long, long time.
Long time.
And folks who work at the FBI, many of them have been there 20 or 30 years. And they may, in their hearts, have lean Democratic or lean Republican.
Yeah.
The idea that the whole organization is somehow transformed into this covert cabal to bring down the president, and that the Justice Department is basically eschewing all ethical standards and is going to just out to get the president. There's some desperate stuff going on here, and I have to think that at some point they must know there's some sort of concrete audio evidence or visual evidence that will come out, and that they're going to have to spin real hard to make that look fake.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a kind of a scary time, frankly, to me.
It is really it is unusual to watch and hard to understand, but it does bring it to a point a year into this, as we just discussed off the air. I don't know what there is to say anymore because I don't understand. You know, one day there's something else, and one day it looks like that somebody was trying to, in fact, you know, take this guy down. And then the second dossier, all these things appear, and they keep appearing or being planted or something. But it turns into there's no way to decide or understand what's going on, and that seems to be the point.
Yeah, I think the idea is to confuse. But it may bring some perspective to it to think about. I read this yesterday that during Nixon's State of the Union address, I'm not clear what year it was, maybe 74. They had been investigating him for almost a year. And he said in his State of the Union, it's time to move past Watergate. We've heard enough about Watergate.
Yep.
And then 6 months later, it took 18 months to bring him down. So to get all the evidence out. So we are probably halfway there. I don't know at this point what
it really is hard to and it's also been unusually quiet for the past month. You haven't heard anything about Ivanka or Jared Kushner or Donnie John Jr. Or the family. Not a mention there. Mitch McConnell has been unusually low-key, as has Paul Ryan. Chuck Schumer and Ms. Pelosi seem to be blowing some chances to get some things done because they're trying to out badass Trump, and they can't do that.
And meanwhile, you've got the Dreamers hanging in the balance and all kinds of other stuff.
All these people's lives hang in the balance, and that's the part that we that I think is so troublesome, is that we have lost any compassion or empathy for these people. And now the story today about how Puerto Rico is on their own. We've given you enough. Screw you. Figure it out.
Well, imagine if that was Texas.
It's really a strange thing to see. Those people are as much Americans as anybody in this room.
Yeah, they really are.
And we are cutting them off and saying, y'all figure it out. And that comes probably on the heels of the story out of California. I forgot how many billions the insurance companies are going to be on the hook for all the homes lost, businesses lost.
Right.
43, I believe, billion was the number.
Wow.
And you add that on to the hurricanes and the insurance companies and the government, all that stuff. And so Puerto Rico is getting short shrift here. Y'all be cool. Good luck.
Good luck.
And that doesn't seem right either, but where do you draw the line? I don't know.
I would not be buying any insurance company stocks at this point.
Yeah, I bet there are some long...
climate change and all that stuff happening.
There's some long scotch-filled conversations being held in insurance places around the country. Well, I mean, it's there. I don't know what the answer is or what to even say about it because... you don't know enough sometimes to make a comment that seems intelligent or informed because it changes every hour.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to go see Bruce at the comedy club. And
I think your idea about writing about kittens next week is a good one.
I'm actually going to do that.
I think you should.
I'm on it.
Just break it down.
I don't even have the kitten in mind.
They're soft. Or you could do a review of the Puppy Bowl on Sunday.
Oh, that's true. I could do that. I have a young friend of my stepson, who's going to be in one of the Super Bowl commercials.
Really?
Yes. He's going to be walking dogs. Look for
him. Can we meet him or something?
Yeah, he's a local musician. Good guy.
Okay, well, good for him. There's all that, and we're just left hanging with nothing else to say. I mean, it has left me. And have you tried to watch any of the news networks for more than about a half hour?
I start...
it'll make you suicidal.
Last night I watched... Tucker Carlson for about 15 minutes,
and
I thought, okay, now I've got that side. And then I went to CNN, and I stayed for an hour, and then halfway into the next show, I realized it was the same show over again with different faces.
Exactly.
So an hour of CNN is about right for me, and then I tend to read.
Yeah, all of them do the same thing. Fox, CNN, and MSNBC, they have a different host every hour, and they change the experts on the panel. But they cover the very same stories every hour all night. And that's not helpful. This morning, and this wasn't in any of my news services, but there was a new list out, because we all love the lists, about the most hated and distrusted corporations in America. Number one was Trump Industries, hotels, golf courses, or whatever. Number two, I forgot what it was. Number three was CNN. Number four was Fox. And all of these news agencies and the gatherers are all distrusted, mistrusted, hated, and Trump was number one.
Yeah.
But none of this matches up with the other numbers.
Well, it's when you've spent the entire year demonizing the DOJ and the FBI and the media, people get confused.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we trust? Well, the president says we shouldn't trust any of our institutions that are protected by the Constitution, we should be just trusting him. So you got people that'll buy that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why, but there is a cult. There is a sort of sense that whatever he says is cool.
It is cultish, but I've not in my lifetime, I can't imagine any other president talking about the FBI and the DOJ like they're being talked about as if they're the bad guys. And there may be some loose cannons.
Well, we had J. Edgar Hoover at one point doing some crazy stuff, but we've appointed oversight in the 70s, and that's been working pretty well until recently. Now we're getting to the place where if the top of the executive branch is is demonizing the judicial branch and the branch of government that's supposed to keep us safe from enemies, foreign and domestic. Then we're getting into some sticky politics.
I'll go back to one word: kittens.
Yep.
Over to the flyby page. A number of things. So this opening the booze on Main Street.
It's not going to go anywhere.
So was that part of the container issue off of Beale?
Yeah. They were going to expand it to Maine. Yeah, and downtown. And rightfully, I think the downtown businesses and residents said, no way.
That probably is. There's probably enough booze on Beale Street. We'll just leave it there.
I think keep it there.
That's probably a good idea. There are some other things that we have pretty much covered. About Trader Joe's, are they coming here or going away?
They say they are. I think they pulled a permit out there in, is it Germantown, I think?
Weren't they here once and went away? I don't remember.
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a cult up around that, too. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I've never been to one, so I don't know.
I don't know either. Bill Haslam is leaving office. He is on the way out, proposed a new budget.
Yep.
That was heavy on education, which is good.
Yeah.
But it was short on other things, like Labor Department people and TDOT cutting a bunch of jobs there, which seems unusual timing,
right,
considering all the infrastructure needs. That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know about that either. This is his final state of the state, and Jackson Baker went up and covered it, and Governor Bill pointed with pride to all the things he had done, and there have been some pretty significant things that he's done. He left out things that, like healthcare, which has been a disaster. So
yeah,
well, all our hospitals are closing. But
he tried on that one.
He tried,
I guess,
hard, but he waited too long until there sort of the opposition had gotten to a place where he couldn't get it by.
Well, that will be the legacy of Ron Ramsey and his criminal activity, and those a-holes ruined this state's ability to get that money and to help people, all in the name of, well, we'll just skip that. It's all
ideology.
It's just stupid.
Yeah.
So there's Bill again, the Russian social media bots.
Yeah.
This is fun. Mark Zuckerberg is trying against, big odds to eliminate the Russian involvement on Facebook.
As
the
Twitter
ad
is
buying,
doing as well, trying to.
Can you imagine that is even possible to do?
No. I mean, if you look at the... I heard a radio show yesterday on another channel. I won't mention which one, but they were talking about the fake Twitter followers that
I didn't know that
folks have.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah,
yeah, and they mentioned that the president of the University of Memphis has 90,000 followers, 88,000 of which are bots or fake or whatever. And I'm sure he didn't do anything to do that, but to make that happen. But they're out there. There's millions following Trump that aren't real.
What's to be gained by that?
I don't understand. Money? Other than you can they can retweet in mass. So if you got a message to get out, you can do it much more efficiently if you've got 300,000.
So they're
retweeters.
Puffing up the numbers towards some kind of gain that we can't.
Yeah, I mean, and
or gain, not
their
game.
Gain, yeah, and they're following folks, and then they're retweeting and. I don't know what the future of Twitter is. I don't even know in 3 or 4 years if anybody's going to be using Twitter, but right now it's being utilized for political gain.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that
the Russian bots are everywhere.
Yeah, just the game playing on that too. It's unbelievable. And I saved this story to share with you because I'm like out of news. But on the note of Facebook and Twitter and this never-ending nonsense that is so, misused by most people and should go away. This little, kids app on Facebook is scary and a problem. But this story, I thought, man, we have really got a problem. It says here, when you decide to go on vacation, do you consider the activities involved, the scenic beauty or the weather? Or do
yes.
you even consider the Instagram ability of where you are going?
No.
Now, you travel, and I travel, and that's never crossed my mind. But a recent survey shows that 4 in 10 millennials say that the Instagram ability of where they're going is a big factor when choosing their next holiday spot. And that makes me feel very sad.
I just don't even know where that...
What do you say about
that? What do you do with that? That's beyond me and other places.
The cost of it... the cuisine, local culture, the booze, the bars is not as important as the pictures they can take and put on Instagram. Hmm. And that to me is frightening, sad, and the end is
it's
near.
It's mystifying. I have no idea.
I don't know what any of this
how
means.
How legit that survey is either. But
well,
whatever.
That's a good point, too, because there's lots of surveys. The new flyer is on stands. Bruce Van Weingarten is our guest. Tell us about the cover, a gentleman, and
this
what he does.
This is a guy I didn't know anything about. Writer or music editor Alex Green brought him to my attention two or three weeks ago. He is a kid out of Orange Mound. A kid, he's probably 35 now. Who invented this software that had Apple coming around and Google coming around to sort of lure him away. But he's decided to stay in Memphis, and he's now the president of the Grammy organization here. But he has invented this software that, you know, when you used to get an album, the CD cover or the record album cover would show you the name of the producer,
right,
who played bass, and
right,
all the credits. Well, now with streaming, that isn't happening. So a lot of folks aren't getting any credit for the music they're involved in. But he created a digital way of making that happen that's become very popular and getting used by labels and other folks. So it's a.
I see pictures here.
He pulled that out in Memphis, Tennessee.
I'm trying to understand how that works because, you know, one of the best parts of buying an album was to read everything
absolutely
on it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But good for him. I don't know how this works, but I'll read the article.
Yeah, he's going around the world and talking about it, and he's getting, you know, offers. But just an interesting background, just an Orange Mound kid who had an old Texas Instruments computer and started learning how to program it and came out of that background to where he is now. It's
well,
pretty impressive
good for him
story.
Yeah. And congrats to him. A new book about Sammy Davis Jr. May have to get this one.
Oh, hell.
Old Sammy was a trip. Johnny Cool by, this is Chris Davis's review.
Yeah.
Of Sammy the Candyman.
It's a movie, I believe.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Is it a biopic or a movie?
Well, I think it's a, gosh, you've got to ask me. This is like a pop quiz. I have to read every damn word.
I know,
it's at
I'm
the
sorry.
Malco Paradiso
oh,
in Ridgeway. It's
well,
a movie.
Then never mind.
It's sort of a showcase of films.
I will see it on the Netflix when it comes out there.
Oh.
Preston Shannon, a big name in this town. You know, have you noticed, and I don't understand this, that this city tends to attach the moniker king or queen
to
anybody who dies?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, to being the king of something.
Well, there was the queen of somebody that she passed away, and there was a queen before her, and now there's a new king, though, every week.
Yeah.
So when Lawler dies, there'll be no wrestling king. Elvis was the king. B.B. King was the king. So we're running out of kings and queens.
Preston was, I think, legit the king of Beale Street. He played there for decades.
A long time.
Paid his dues, to say the least.
Well,
and he passed away last week of cancer.
Yeah.
At 70, I think.
That's a little bit too early.
Absolutely.
The older we get. And a litany of things here about who is performing. There are some great, great acts coming to town. Kris Kristofferson is playing, and I would almost consider leaving the house to go see him. He's the last of a certain bunch. He is getting up there, as is Willie.
Yep.
But when Chris comes around, you might consider going.
Take your
to
shot
see him.
When you got while you yeah. have while you still have it.
Yeah, no kidding. And there are a number of other things on this. Your son's band has a new album out. MGMT
has a new album coming out February 9th. They're in Europe now, kicking off a tour, and I mentioned this to you earlier because it was just so bizarre. He was I guess Kanye West came to their show and they hung out with him afterwards and jammed. I'm not sure how you jam with Kanye West, but then Dave Chappelle showed up. So I'm dropping names here. They're having a big time over there.
So was Dave doing his comedy
in
Berlin?
Yeah, doing a show over there. And, you know, I think when you have Dave and Kanye in the same town, they probably, you know, adhere to each other.
But Dave seems to be so down to earth and real, and Kanye's from Mars.
That's what I
very
was
strange
told by
cat.
My son. He's a bizarre fellow.
So he was just not, he really is just a unique individual, or is he medicated beyond?
He just said he was weirdly enthusiastic about things. It was very sober, didn't smoke or drink.
So it was no Coke, no Adderall. He's just wildly enthusiastic.
Yeah, he may have some little quirky mental
yeah.
freak. I have no idea.
Hey, who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Well, good luck to the boys in the MGMT band and to Kanye. I miss
Absolutely.
Him so much.
I miss him too.
Read the new
Hope
flyer.
Chicago's okay.
Pickett, yeah, Chicago's the new kid. Is it a boy or a girl? Or does it matter?
It is.
I don't have any idea. I don't care. thank you, sir.
Thank
you. Flyers on newsstands. Support their sponsors. Pick it up and read it. And Bruce thanks you, and we thank you, and we'll be back in a moment.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.
And this guy named John Scott, who many of you, if you're of a certain age, you know John from, he was back in the late 60s, FM 100 was one of the first FM progressive real hippie stations in this country. And he was one of the first DJs on that station. And I could hear it up in Murray, Kentucky, and it just blew my mind that you know, because AM was all the, you know, king back then, and then the FM stations like FM 100 and KSAN in San Francisco and KMET in LA and a number of they just all kind of began to play album sides and do weird stuff and talk real soft and real far out. And so John was from here, and he did that. Well, then he got involved in the record business. He moved to L.A. and got involved with various labels. I guess MCA was where he was at first. And as time went by, he got involved with Backstreet Records, which is where Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers ended up. So Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, this is the mid-late 70s. And so that band, I guess the first single they put out was Breakdown. Or maybe that was the second one. I can't remember. But they were getting big in Europe, and they were touring there. But they came back here, and Breakdown was just not happening on the radio. And that was a strange time. The late 70s was... It was still Zeppelin and the Stones and Bob Seger and Ted Nugent. Then in 78, you had, Foreigner and Styx and bands like that came along. So you had this real, you know, mishmash of kinds of music. And so bands like Tom Petty and the Cars and all of them kind of came out at once. And it was hard to understand what they were trying to do. That seems, you know, dumb now because of how those songs have aged over time, and now they're just, you know, classics. So John, they were about to drop Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers from the label, which means that we would likely have never heard of them. But John was committed to getting Breakdown played on the radio. So he told the bosses and the guys in charge, listen, give me a couple of weeks, or a few months, and let me get this thing played, and I'll show you it can be done. So he went to Boston, he went to San Francisco, he went to New York, and he got Breakdown on the radio. Well, that began their career, and Tom Petty and Mike Campbell and Stan Lynch and the guys in that band always gave him credit for, you know, making and or saving their career. And as years went by, I ended up in Dallas doing radio, and then John and I got to be really good friends, and I went to work with him in Los Angeles in the record business, working with, you know, various bands and doing stuff like that. Well, we, you know, one of the best parts of that was the access to Tom Petty and to be able to, you know, go to his house and to hear what he was doing. And to be involved with him after I had met him back in the late 70s when they weren't stars. They were playing in Louisville, opening up for the Romantics or some absurd thing like that. But so he and John stayed close over the years, and then things got, Tom's life changed considerably. And he had good times, he had bad times, but... At the end of all of this is the most emotional part, and the saddest part is that the last show that Tom played at the Hollywood Bowl, John was there, and he saw him backstage before the gig. And he can tell the story because he's going to be on the show tomorrow. But Tom was in incredible pain at the time. And during that show, he thanked John Scott from the stage for all of his help over 40 years and for saving his career, not one time, but maybe twice. Because when MCA heard I Won't Back Down, they hated it. And so wow. this song is a stiff. We're not going to play it. And so they had to go fight again. So Tom thanked him from the stage on his last show. And then 6 days after that, Tom is gone. And so John was one of the very few people that was at this service for Tom Petty. And that had to be pretty emotional. And then the worst part of all of this, I think, for any of us, or just for anybody that loved Tom Petty and his music, if you knew him and were ever around him for any length of time, he was a special dude. He just had this aura about him, but nonetheless, he was just an average kid from the South who did good. So when it was learned that a combination of too many painkillers and too many drugs of a bad nature is what killed him, that really, really, crushed those closest to him. And it really hurt even more to have him, lumped into that category of overdoses. There's some kind of stigma attached to that that is extremely ugly. And Tom didn't deserve that. He had been through some real bad issues with drugs and escaped them. But he was in incredible pain, and his damn hip was broken. But he kept going on every night for 53 shows and taking these, all this heavy dope to kill the pain so he could play. And the part that nobody understands is that why he did not go right to the hospital after that last show. His hip was broken, and the guy was a mess. Instead, I don't know what happened, nor does John, but we will. We may discuss that. We may not, because it's a moot point at this juncture. But John is doing a book about his time and his travels with TP. It's called Me and Tom Petty, and it'll be out in March, and you can pre-order it. But tomorrow, John's going to join us. He has some great stories, laugh-out-loud funny stories about Tom. And he and I spent some really good time with Tom and with that band at one of the craziest points in their lives. Don't Come Round Here No More was the first single off of that album. And when he was doing that, he called us one day and had me and John come by his house in Encino, where they recorded the record, and he played us that song. And I'll never forget sitting there, and that's the house that somebody burned to the ground about a year later. So there are so many stories that John has about him, but John was in town last year. It was 50 years ago that FM 100 came on the air, and so he was back for that. But he's doing this book, just his stories about TP and how it all happened. But were it not for John Scott, this band might have ended up back in Gainesville, playing bars. But they have always, thanked him for bailing them out. So that's tomorrow morning, 8:30. We'll chat with John and see what's up with him about the new Tom Petty book that'll be out in March. There will likely, I'm guessing, in the wake of Tom's passing, be other people that write books. The only book out there that is worth even reading is the one that came out in 2016. I'm trying to remember the guy's name right now. He was in.
It was a real simple title.
Yeah, he was Warren Zanes. Tom gave him access and talked to him honestly. And the book is great. And in that book, there's about a 12-page explanation of how this all went down and how John, came to their rescue and fought like a madman to get that song on the radio. And can you imagine that breakdown had to be fought for?
It's hard to from this perspective now.
Yeah, it's just hard to, hard to picture that. Yeah, that was the late 70s, and then everything went on for 40 years and came to its ultimate conclusion in a sad way, but that's how things work out sometimes. So tomorrow we'll chat with John. Many of you know him or know of him, and he's been a good friend to me for a long time, and we will chat with him tomorrow about the new book, Me and Tom Petty or something. In the meantime, Valentine's Day coming, Sherry's Berries is back, and just in time to team up with Pro Flowers for you for Valentine's Day to really impress your Valentine with their perfectly paired collection. This is a kind of a cool idea. You get all the strawberries in the great box and flowers together in a beautiful, specially designed box that keeps the berries cold and the flowers fresh. That's a pretty good deal. Go to the website, Sherry's Berries, BERRIES.com. It explains how this works. You can save 20% on any of their perfectly paired combinations or any other gift over $29 with the promo code DRAKE. It explains it a lot better on the site. So it's a money saver. It's a nice, inexpensive way to impress your Valentine with chocolates, these great Sherry's Berries, and Pro Flowers, too. Berries.com, BERRIES. Get some Sherry's Berries, and you will enjoy them for Valentine's Day.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.